This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Tuesday, April 30th, 2024 edition. We have closed out the fourth month of the year, and tomorrow we get the fun Fed day. They started a meeting today, and there's already market volatility that is accompanying this news that's coming up here. And we're going to dig into why that might be. We're going to give you some actionable material so that you can bring that back to your own personal situation and make better decisions with your money day after day, week after week, year after year. It's not about just getting that one stock tip. It's about shaping the right mindset so you're not falling prey to the pitfalls that the emotions typically lead you into. And frankly, that's lesson number one for everybody, should be focusing on the facts at hand, not chasing returns, not allowing fear and greed to dominate your thinking. To focus on quality businesses, quality companies, quality assets that stand the test of time, that have durability and are not just flash in the pan for what is exciting or interesting today. What's exciting, interesting to us, at least, are good companies, good businesses. And that doesn't mean that they have to have gigantic growth. It doesn't mean that they have to be in a business that is super interesting to study. A lot of the best businesses are very boring. And so that's what the show is about. We're not Kramer. We're not banging bells. I'm not Kathy Wood. I'm not going to spin a magical story about castles in the sky. This is about down-to-earth investing based on real valuations, real assets, real companies, real cash flows. Okay? So I'm Justin Klein, and that is our goal each and every weekday. Now, we're going to talk about the market performance for today as well as run down some show topics. But as usual, we're going to hit on our first caller question now.
I wanted to call to get your opinion on Capital One Financial. It is a financial stock, and I was interested in purchasing something in the banking industry. So I'd like your thoughts on Capital One. Thank you.
All right, looking at Capital One Financial, COF is a symbol. Now, this is not a bank. Now, is it similar to bank? Yes. They lend money. They lend money and they earn interest on it, a lot like a bank, but it's mainly a credit card company. Now they do automobile financing and they have some other products. But the vast majority of their business is credit cards, especially after the recent acquisition of Discover Financial. And this is a merger that, frankly, I like. I like the thought process here, the potential efficiencies that could be created with the tie-up of Capital One to Discover, not just from efficiencies of potentially reducing headcounts and combining two large credit card companies into one, but also expanding their payment network, at least Discover's payment network, which Capital One has talked about trying to do. And so I like that. But don't think you're investing in a bank. You're investing in a company that is highly levered, highly correlated with the credit cycle, with the jobs market, because most of their customers are going to be your average worker. And you had Discover, and they typically actually have lower credit quality than most. But Capital One, it's well run historically. Earnings continue to power higher, although expectations for this year and next year continue to be downgraded. So what I would say is, yes, I would buy it, but I do think a pullback into the 125 level, that would be an area that I like to pick it up. 143 is where it's at today. It's on our watch list, but 125 is where we would start thinking about buying it. But I like what you're looking at, but don't think it's a bank. It is a credit card company. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point is about valuations and why large cap growth stocks and their valuations matter. Now, may not matter in the next year, and we'll talk about that, but over extended period of time, it will. It does. And we're going to talk about some historic instances where valuations became stretched, especially in relation to growth versus value, and what the subsequent return was for those asset classes over the next 5, 10, 15 years. Okay. So that's what's on the docket for us, our main focus point. I have some others to discuss as well. One is really about working from home. Is the work from home trend going to slow dramatically? Because maybe it's not as efficient as most investors had, or most managers and business leaders have hoped. So we're going to look at some data there. Also, the Treasury refunding announcement. It started today with how much they expect to borrow for the second quarter. But then tomorrow is, how are they going to do that? How are they going to issue more bills or notes? And this is going to be important to how liquidity ebbs and flows in Q2. And so I want to talk about that and dig into that story a bit deeper, because it is very, very important. And then lastly, if we have time, investors are back. The thrill factor is back. Everyone is jumping in on their Robinhood accounts and, you know, buying those sexy names once again, and very reminiscent of 2021. But you know how that ended for most investors in 2022. So are we getting a redux of that? And are we soon going to see that reversal once again? Okay. So we're going to look at that data. We also have voice bank questions. One is on Evercore Incorporated and F5 Inc., as well as a couple questions from the comment section on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, your finance investment questions are number one. I can talk about all of those things that I just previewed, but most importantly, if you call live, we will answer it right then and there, and we can have a discussion, and we love that. So once again, we are going into a short break on the other side. We'll talk about today's market activity and take your live calls. So if you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. With total downloads surpassing 50 million, each InvestTalk podcast should be one of your key financial planning and educational tools. InvestTalk is a free download, and hosts Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to provide their unbiased guidance and professional analysis developed from real-time data research and years of investing experience. 24/7, rain or shine, during smooth sailing or on rough weather days, the InvestTalk listener line is open and waiting for your questions. You set the agenda. Don't forget to call. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market for today. It was a decidedly red day on the back of a few poor earnings announcements. You had Warner Brothers down 9%, Tesla down another 5.5% after this recent bounce. MicroStrategy down 17%. So the Bitcoin related funds were certainly down. That has pulled back. The big gainers for today were actually the cannabis stocks. There is a rumor that the federal government will reclassify cannabis from Schedule 1, and that will certainly help the cannabis companies do a bit more business and get out from underneath a lot of the regulations. And so that was the big news in kind of a very small subsector, as a lot of those names have continued to kind of just grind lower over the last couple of years. Now, the growth side of the market certainly underperformed overall. I think the real driver, however, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is the Treasury refunding announcement. They basically issued an announcement that they are going to issue more debt than the market had been expecting, which means that there's more private balance sheet that's going to need to come into play here in order to finance the government's debt in the second quarter, which historically the second quarter is a quarter where there's not a lot of issuance. And it's the lowest issuance. Why? Because that's when people are paying taxes. That's the most tax revenue that comes in the second quarter. And so the fact that that beat told or is telling investors that maybe tax receipts weren't as high and the deficit continued to blow out in many respects. And so tomorrow we have the Fed announcements. They're very unlikely to do anything in regards to rates, but we know it's going to be all about the path of potential future rates, as well as QT potentially winding down the shrinkage of their balance sheet. And then the Treasury refunding announcements, second part comes out tomorrow, and that is in regards to bills versus notes, and that will have an impact as well. So potential fireworks tomorrow in both directions. Certainly could have a rebound as well. So that's what the market consisted of today. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about our InvestTalk audio podcast, moving over to video form, or adding video form over on our YouTube channel. So we stream live every day. We don't stream live. We post a version of the show usually the night of each show. So you'll hear this if you're listening via the live stream or on podcast. This will hit the YouTube channel sometime a few hours after the show. And we share a screen so you'll be able to see what we're talking about, what charts we're looking at, what data on individual companies we're looking at, etc. And it's a great tool for everyone over there. You can even comment in the comment section and leave a question, and we'll answer it on a future show. And that's what happened with Finance Anarchy. Says, I'm looking to get more mid-cap exposure. Could you talk about the Spider Russell 1000 low volatility focused ETF? This came up in one of my screens. It only has a 0.2% expense ratio. I was thinking this could be a good way to gain safe exposure to mid-caps. All right. Now, the first thing I want to say about this is these low volatility ETFs, I think they are widely misunderstood. Widely misunderstood. Because people read them, they think low volatility. And to most people, low volatility means safe. And you can see that with the comment, looking for safe exposure to mid-caps. Let me explain something. There is no such thing as safe when it comes to equities. Equities are aggressive. Now, can they be less aggressive than the average equity exposure? Yes, absolutely. But are they safe? No. And this is a good example. We use risk scores of 1 to 99. Morningstar has a similar type of scale. And what they have is 100 plus is extreme. 79 to 99 is very aggressive. And 48 to 78 is aggressive. And this particular ETF, this is the ONEV, it comes in at 76. So the high end of aggressive, on the borderline of very aggressive. And so, you know, for us, anything over 75 is aggressive. So is this less aggressive than just owning MDY, which would be the mid-cap, right? That's the S&P mid-cap 400 ETF. So similar type of exposure. And that risk comes in at 85. So it's less volatile than just the mid-cap index. Yes, that's true. But it is not safe. I don't care what ETF you're looking at. I don't care what fund you're looking at. If it is all equities, whether it's large cap or mid cap, small cap, foreign, value, growth, it does not matter. It is aggressive. It's just shades of aggressiveness. So understand that first. Now, is this a bad ETF? No, it's a fine ETF. I have no issue with it, to be frank. But don't ever think low volatility equals safe. All it means is a little bit less aggressive. Now we're heading into a break. I enjoy your voice bank questions and your calls, but we love your live calls during the podcast. So give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk. Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Is it delivering the types of gains you want and need to achieve financial freedom? Well, turn up the volume, because there are many questions that deserve unbiased answers. And Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Invest Talks. Today I'm calling about two companies, with the first being Evercore, ticker symbol EVR. I currently own the company with an average cost basis of $111, and I'd like to pick up some more shares given the noticeable pickup in M&A activity. My primary reason for calling for that company is because I need a buy point. The second company is Old Dominion Freight Line, ticker symbol ODFL, which I had never heard of before April. I took a look at the company, and it fits in line with the businesses I like to own. My only problem is I'm unwilling to pay a significant premium for any company because I obsess over getting in at the right price. I believe 174 to be a place to start picking up shares, so please let me know if you agree, and I'll be watching on YouTube. Thank you.
All right, looking at ODFL as well as Evercore. Let me hit on ODFL, which is Old Dominion Freight Lines. I talked about this on air. Caller asked about it a few weeks ago and said this is a fantastic business. Now, this is weakening. Technically, it did have a divergent high recently, and it started to roll over. And it is trading at a pretty hefty premium to the market, 32 times forward-looking earnings. And we know that it's historically a valuation that, you know, is frankly too rich for my blood. you definitely want to, you're okay paying me a premium, as I always say, for very good business, but I want to pay closer to the low 20 range for forward-looking multiples. So if you're looking at $7.12 expected next year in earnings, that puts you somewhere in the 150 level for picking up Old Dominion. Now it's at 181. It has dropped from 52-week high of 227 and change. So it has come down significantly, down 20% from its all-time high. My support level, 158. That's where I'd be picking up Old Dominion. Now, when it comes to Evercore, a bit different of a business. It's up and down, and they are an investment bank, and they focus on, as the caller said, M&A activity. And, you know, earnings were fantastic in 2021, $17.50, but fell to $6.46 last year. It's supposed to rebound to $10.38 this year. You know, what I don't love about this is just so how the business is so up and down. I don't like that. I like the consistent businesses. Evercore, it's a fine kind of small to mid-cap investment bank. They have minimal debt in the balance sheet. That's good. They have solid cash flow. But once again, those earnings, those cash flows, they ebb and flow a little bit too much for my liking. So I think at $437 million free cash flow trailing 12 months, that's solid, but this needs to pull back. It's overbought. It's ran from a low in the fall of 2022, around $80 per share, hit a high of $196, and it's starting to roll over again. Let me give you a support level on Evercore. The next major support, 153. So I think both of these names, right around the 150, 155 level, that is the place to pick Evercore as well as Old Dominion up. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point today concerns this topic: why it matters that large cap growth stocks, are overvalued. And this is something that's really important to understand, because so many people tout valuation as a reason to buy or sell in the short term. And the reality is, over a short period of time, valuations actually don't matter. But when you start zooming out and you go over longer periods of time, they absolutely do matter. And there's a measure called R square, which is what's the predictive value of valuations. And over a 12-month period, it's very low. It's only 0.05, which is very low. But when you start going out to 5 years, it's 0.18. When you go out to 10 years, it can rise up to 0.36 if you're talking about the value indexes. And so Vanguard Research basically puts that valuations as a 40% of the variable returns in after inflation returns for equities, meaning it's not the end all be all. Just like anything in markets and investing, there's not one factor you can point to and say, that's why you buy it or that's why you sell it. It's a multitude of factors. Just as I always say, you don't just look at a dividend and say it pays a 6% dividend and buy it. That doesn't make sense. It's always a multitude of factors. And valuations over a 10-year period account for about 40% of the explanatory variations in performance. Okay. So once again, short period of time, it doesn't matter. 5, 10 years out, it absolutely matters. Now, if you look at some previous periods, for example, if we look at January 12th through March 2024, the growth index outperformed the value in the Russell 1000 value index by over 6%. Okay. And that's huge. And what's that? That's created is recency bias, saying, okay, during this period of financial repression, 0% interest rates, growth drastically outperformed. And it preys on people's tendency to project recent performance into the future as if it was going to happen again. And the reality is that history tells us that it does not happen again. In fact, the opposite tends to happen over extended periods of time. So after the break, I'm going to dig into the numbers and explain to you why the instances in the past can be explanatory for what you're expected to see in the near future. Now I'm Justin Klein. I'm taking your calls now at 888-99-CHART. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne.com, HackerOne.com.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I talked about how there's not a lot of predictive power in valuations over the short term, but over extended period of times, there absolutely is. And I talked about the period between 2012 and 2024, where growth drastically outperformed. But over that time, the PE ratios of the Russell 1000 Growth Index has risen 36% above its average since 2000, all the way to 33 times earnings. The Russell 2000 value, however, has a PE ratio of just 11, 26% below its average of 14.9% since 2000. And if you look at price to book, the Russell 1000 growth is now 88% above its average since 2000, and the Russell 2000 value, its price to book has fallen over that time by 7%, and it's only at 1.3%, okay, 1.3 times book, which is very cheap. And if you go back in history, this isn't the only time that valuations of large companies drastically increased. And if you look back to those periods, there's something easy to glean. Okay. Now, there are three periods: 1929 to 1947, 1966 to 1982, and 2000 to 2017, where at least 17-year periods where the S&P underperformed treasuries. And that was after these big run-ups in valuation. Okay. So when these valuation extremes hit, the period after that can be very long. Like I said, those were 17-year periods after those peaks in valuations where the S&P underperformed five-year treasuries, treasury yields, okay? Now, not to say that that is absolutely going to happen again, but it's pretty clear that you don't want to be stepping out into those names when valuations are this extreme. So make sure that you're not chasing performance, you're seeking the truth, you're focusing on data to create persistence, perseverance, robustness in your strategy. And you should be buying when others are panicking, as Warren Buffett said, not as people are chasing the sexy names. Let's go ahead and drop in another InvestTalk listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. Thank you so much for a lovely program. Very educational and very helpful. I do have one stock which I have kept on my watch list. I would like to know your thoughts about. It's FFIV. They came out with earnings today in the evening. I would like to know what your take is for entering a position. Thank you so much.
All right, looking at FFIV, it was down, after our, down today, pretty big, about 10% on the day to the lowest level since November of last year. Now, it is at into a support zone between, say, 145 and 165, just kind of entered that range. So there's some technical support here. Now, if you look at the fundamentals, earnings are expected to increase 8% this year, 11% next year. No dividend yield, but return on equity is 27%. So obviously a very good business. Let's look at the consistency of that. And that's so important. It's not just about what is the return on equity today, but how consistently are they turning out that return on equity? And what I would say is it's definitely below its longer-term average. But it is headed higher. It was at 13% in March of last year and has been an uptrend ever since. So I like that. Let's look at the balance sheet. Zero long-term debt. I like that. Free cash flow around $610 million on about a $10 billion market cap. So about a 6% free cash flow yield. That's pretty solid. Not an exciting name, not a sexy name, but a very, very good business, good balance sheet. I'm going to give this one a thumbs up. It's definitely in a longer-term uptrend, and it's just getting into some support here. But be aware that you could see some more near-term downside. Typically, after earnings, when you have bad earnings reports, takes about 3 days for it to settle out. Now, it did hit support right around 163, bounced already a little bit. So you might want to add a position here. And if it gets down to maybe 155, that's where I would pick up more. So I like FFIV is the symbol. Thanks for the call. Now, here's another question from our Invest Talk YouTube channel. Jim Lay says, I'd like your thoughts on Cincinnati Financial. CINF is the symbol. And this is an insurance company. They offer commercial and personal lines of insurance, such as commercial casualty and commercial property insurance. 2.8% dividend yield. This has been kind of in a holding pattern really since COVID. It's been flat price performance. It earned $4.20 in 2019, but expected to earn $6.40 next year. The question is, what does the balance sheet look like? What does the profitability look like? Let me pull that up here. So we have return on equity around 20%. That's pretty nice. But its longer-term average is closer to 13%. The chart is stuck in neutral, frankly. It doesn't look particularly bullish or bearish. The fundamentals are just okay. Let me take a look at the valuation. Profitability is good, like I said. Valuation looks in line as well. I have no issue there. I just don't love the technicals here. It's just so meh from a technical perspective. So I think you find better within the insurance industry. I like what you're looking at. I like the insurance industry. I just don't love this particular name. Thanks for the call. Now let's discuss a boring subject, frankly, but in today's world of fiscal dominance, and that's what we're in, folks. We are in a period where it has the economic trajectory has far less to do with what the Fed is doing and more about what government bureaucrats are doing, unfortunately. And are they spending more? Are they spending less? Are they reforming entitlements or are they not? And when it comes to the latter, neither side of the aisle wants to reform entitlements in any significant way. And on the former, both sides want to spend. A lot of lobbyists, K Street's still out there spending millions and billions of dollars each year to fight for their causes and get the government to, you know, cut more checks to their particular industry. And therefore, the deficit continues to balloon. And with each passing month, each passing quarter, it's becoming even more important to the financial system and liquidity dynamics, which feed into asset prices, becomes even more important what the Treasury is saying more than the Fed. And according to the Treasury Department's refunding announcement today, Washington expects to borrow $243 billion in the second quarter. That's $41 billion higher than officials projected at the beginning of the year and greater than all the market forecasts. And the main reason is the federal government says tax receipts are short of their expectations. Now, in the first quarter, the Treasury borrowed $748 billion, slightly under the first estimate of $760 billion. So, you know, they did a little bit better in the first quarter. But the second quarter, more issuance, much more issuance, making up for that and then some, mainly due to, like I said, those lower tax receipts. Now, in the third quarter, they expect to borrow $847 billion. So you can see as the second quarter is the lightest of the year, but it's still much higher than the market had been expecting. And the main reason this is an issue is because of the last several months, some of the Treasury debt auctions have been relatively lackluster in demand. And primary dealers have had to pick up a lot of the leftover supply. And for instance, April 10th auction, just a few weeks ago, 24% of that $39 billion 10-year Treasury auction was picked up by primary dealers, which means that the balance sheet capacity of foreign governments, of investors, funds, etc. They just don't have enough balance sheet capacity to take on duration. And that's what a 10-year note is. It's a duration asset. It's not a short-term T-bill that it rolls over in a few months. 10 years is an extended period of time. And so tomorrow we get their announcement about how they plan to issue. Not today was how much they plan to issue. Now it's about how they plan to issue. And in the previous announcement, they said that they do not plan to boost the issuance of medium and long-term debt for at least the next several quarters. Now, is that political? We are in an election year, potentially. But that's why I think was the driver of the market sell-off mainly today, was that surprise upside of the expected borrowing. And then tomorrow will be not just what the Fed does, but whether or not the Treasury will be issuing more of those longer-dated securities or less. And they even say that the eventual stopping point of QT, turning to the Fed announcement on QT, that will depend on market volatility and spreads. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how the market responds and how the Fed responds to the Treasury's basically forced volatility that comes out of whatever they're saying. And so it's never been more clear that the Fed and the Treasury are working hand in hand in many respects. Now, this is InvestTalk, now with more than 58.5 million downloads since it all began. Let's keep things moving and play a caller question that came in at 888-99-CHART from North Carolina.
Hey, Luke and Justin. This is Josh here in North Carolina. I had a question about two stocks I would like to pick between, CSCO, Cisco, as well as HPQ for Hewlett-Packard. Just looking at them, they look sound. They look like the price might be right. Also looking at the dividend, just wanted to get your impressions of these. Thanks a lot.
All right, looking at CSCO and HPQ. And as of late, really since the fall, HPQ has certainly been outperforming. But if I look at the different businesses, let's start with HPQ. Earnings this year are expected to go up 4% and then 8% next year. And those estimates are coming higher. So that's a positive. Trades at about seven times forward-looking earnings, minimal debt, very profitable business. Cisco, on the other hand, earnings are expected to fall 21% this year and flat next year. Okay, 3.4% dividend yield, trading at 12 times earnings. So am I going to pay a high single-digit multiple for not amazing, but modest earnings growth, or a low teens multiple for something that is actually negative to flat earnings growth? So on the surface here, you definitely go with HPQ based on valuation and recent earnings trends. Now, Cisco, it's still a good business. Return on equity around 30%, return on invested capital around 25%, but return on invested capital for HP is 44%. And they have a pretty solid balance sheet. So that relative performance, that better valuation, those better earnings trends, and longer term, higher return on invested capital, I'm going to go with HPQ over Cisco. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And what I want to do before we get go into our last break, I want to really discuss the trends that are happening in the tech space. Amazon had earnings. They were down a little bit after hours. Tesla as well had a bit of a bounce, down 5.5% today, however. And the ones that even did well, the Microsofts of the world, Microsoft did well in earnings. Now it's at its lowest level since, it's almost flat in the year, so it's a lowest level since mid-January. Google, same thing. It had good earnings, and that started to fade. And so what you're seeing here is that even good earnings announcements are starting to get sold. And this is a trend that you definitely need to pay attention to. I've talked about this trend where the value side of the market has been taking hold really since the fall. It had a bit of a bit of a counter trend rally for growth stocks in the basically in the month of January and a little bit in February. But since then, you're definitely seeing some underlying weakness. And today is another example of that. Large cap growth down 1.68%. Large cap value only down 1.27%. And so I'm seeing a lot of this underneath the surface. And I wanted to highlight that because it's important for you to stay on top of these trends. And if we get a dollar reversing and what's happening with the yen, I could easily see that happening. The Bank of Japan is going to have to support their currency and they need to strengthen the yen. And that would thus weaken the dollar and likely get more upside to the harder assets in the markets, materials, industrials, energy, etc. So be on the lookout for that as we head into the month of May. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into the story. The business of healthcare is complicated. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here, to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, you guys, it's Art from Tucson calling in about HEES, H&E equipment. I own it. It was doing great. It's up about 30% on it, 40% at one time. Just came down, I think, 18% today. So not doing too great today. Wondering if it's a good time to pick up more, wait a little while, or not sure exactly what happened with the stock. Thanks for your input. And shout out to Steve. Hope he's doing better. Thanks for all you do for us. Take it easy.
All right, looking at HEES, H&E Equipment Services. They provide heavy construction and specialized industrial equipment leasing across 137 different branches in 30 states. Small cap company, only a $1.7 billion market cap, but earnings this year are expected to be up 7% and 14% next year, 2.3% dividend yield. But they do have a lot of debt, which, you know, it makes sense for the type of business they have. It's very capital intensive. So, you know, having $1.4 billion in debt, I don't think that's something to really worry about too much. But what would worry me about, is the free cash flow that is negative. And I don't love that. If you look at its return on equity, it's at 37%, but a lot of that is because of leverage. Return on assets is only about 7%. So I don't love that. Now, this recent sell-off, it's a small cap name. So anything in the small cap space with a little bit of debt that maybe disappoints earnings a little bit in the face of higher interest rates, you know, that's going to precipitate a potential market sell-off. And this has fallen from about $65 per share now at the close today, around 48 and change. Now, it did have a drop similar to this back in, let's see, that was 2023, or in March of 2023 when that started. That fell from 55 all the way down to about 34. So it rebounded relatively quick. The long-term trajectory here is still positive. It's still making a series of higher highs and higher lows, but it's a small cap name. That's something everyone should understand, is that just because something's doing well, it's in a good space, it doesn't mean that it can't have a similar amount of volatility that it has had in the past. It usually stays as volatile. It just tends to be volatility in an uptrend, and that's what you're seeing here. So you have to be able to stomach the volatility. I have no problem with the name. I like the business that it's in. I like its profitability long term. And so if you can stomach the volatility, you know, picking this up, picking more of this up in the, you know, 45 range would not be a bad idea. Thanks for the call. Now, Leslie, let's talk a bit about Oh, meme stocks and retail investors, and many of you are. Many of you are retail investors, and the rally that has powered stocks higher this year has mainly excited the average investor, the everyday investor, and started to push them to trade again. And if you look at recent earnings reports, it's pretty clear that the meme stock craze is back in some way, shape, or form. The average daily number of clients trading hands by or trades handled by Charles Schwab rose nearly 6 million in the first quarter, the most since the second quarter of 2022, and up 15% from the last quarter of 2023. Morgan Stanley, which owns E-Trade now, it placed an average of 841,000 trades a day in the first quarter, the most since the second quarter of 2022. Interactive Brokers added 184,000 new accounts, the highest number since the first quarter of 2021. Robinhood is seeing record volume in options. They reported 1.9 million average daily equity trades in February, the most since January of 2022. And so what's pretty clear by the numbers is that the average investor is back all in. And you remember what happened right after all of that happened. Everyone got excited about many of the fun techie names in 2021. Well, higher rates and a more hawkish Fed really crashed the party there. And the question is, if inflation remains relatively sticky, which it looks like it is, if you look at the prices paid index, for example, in the ISM report, it's pretending to a very sticky, if not higher interest rate, higher inflationary period going forward. And will that break the backs of those high multiple tech names and thus the average investor once again? And it's pretty set up to do that with everybody back all in, getting excited about investing in that next great innovative stock. So I wanted to highlight that because it's important to know where positioning is in the market, especially with those retail investors who tend to be pretty fickle and tend to jump ship when things start to go south. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And now, the Invest Talk podcast is available in video form over on our YouTube channel. Just head over there and search Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.